Big show for you on Tuesday, February 25th. We checked in again with one of our regulars, Professor Alan Sanders, former top reporter at Time Magazine and now a political science instructor at St. Peter's University in Jersey City, New Jersey. He gave us his thoughts on the infighting going on among Democrats and what we could look for in the South Carolina primary as well as Super Tuesday. In the 5 o'clock hour, we talked with Hearst Connecticut Media columnist Jacqueline Smith about a thought-provoking piece she wrote regarding active shooter drills in Connecticut schools. He's been on the show several times in the past, former Time Magazine senior reporter. Currently, he's a political science professor at St. Peter's University in Jersey City, New Jersey. Welcome back, Professor Alan Sanders. How are you, Alan?
Very good. Thank you, Paul. How are you doing?
I'm good. You know, last time we chatted, Alan, it seemed like the Trump presidency was teetering on the edge and it was going to bring back some rumored stability and tranquility to the nation. Well, the president survived, and now we go into a debate tonight with a Democratic frontrunner who, I guess, Alan, people think he's going to get ganged up on tonight for comments about Fidel Castro. But boy, I got to tell you, this time of the year for guys like you and I, it's popcorn time, huh?
Absolutely. Of course, we're living in a roller coaster of political era, and so every week is different.
Oh, man.
And that's been true for Trump, and it's also been true, of course, for the Democratic Party. I think everybody's expecting the debate tonight to be a gang-up affair against Bernie Sanders, but, you know, that's usually the case. The front-runner usually gets the brunt of the criticism. But Bernie Sanders is an unusual candidate in that, like Trump, he is an outsider. He is staging what many Democrats believe to be a hostile takeover. He's not even a Democrat. And so some of his comments, particularly, or the latest one being his repeated claims about the Castro regime, are certainly ignited a firestorm, and I suspect he'll be questioned pretty closely on that one tonight.
Yeah, and you know, Alan, there was an interesting piece today in the Washington Post that got picked up by a couple of conservative blogs I saw, and the Post story was to the effect of Democrats know, at least the party proper knows, and even most centrist or even centrist to slightly left people in the party, they know that Sanders has to be attacked on this and other things, but they're afraid to do it. And I wouldn't want to be in their shoes tonight because they're kind of in a damned if you do and a damned if you don't state here.
Well, that's true. The primaries are always a dangerous affair for any party because usually the voters that come out are the more committed and therefore the more extreme, if you want to use that word, voters out there. And so you have to appeal to those more committed voters. But, of course, that's dangerous for the general election because in the general election, you've got the middle of the country voting in large measure. So that is a problem. It's a delicate task, but I think it's kind of a do-or-die affair for several candidates. And when you get to that point, then you sort of bring out all the knives, you think more about your survival than you do about, the general state of the election, I think.
And you saw probably a few days ago where you've got several well-known pundits. You've got James Carville, and whether you like him or not, or like the Clintons or not, the guy does have a really good perception of what's going on. You have Chris Matthews, who made a rather somewhat controversial analogy the other day of the Sanders insurgency. And these are two guys, Professor, who are sending up flares here, banging on every drum they can, saying, you know, somebody's got to take this guy out. And I wonder if their message is falling on deaf ears or not.
Well, I'm not sure it's falling on deaf ears. I think the ghost that is sort of haunting the Democratic Party, all of the folks that you've mentioned, is really the George McGovern candidacy of 1972, another very leftist candidate who just went down to flaming defeat against a president who was also facing, problems, scandal problems. The Watergate issue was just starting to erupt in 1972. So that's the ghost that sort of is haunting centrist Democrats and the people that you mentioned. attention. That's a real issue. But, you know, the other thing that we really have to keep track of, and this is something that I've thought about at some measure, you know, everybody's talking about the momentum and Bernie Sanders, the lead candidate, and certainly that's true. That's what the punditry is talking about. That's what the media is talking about. That's what the Democratic establishment is talking about. But do we all realize that fewer than 700,000 people, fewer than 700,000 people voted in the last three primary contests, and of that 700,000, something like 160,000 voted for Bernie Sanders. So we're rolling out predictions on the basis of 160,000 voters. I mean, you got to kind of sit back and wonder about how amazing that is and whether that truly is reflective of where the party is going to wind up come later this summer when they're meeting at the convention. I mean, it's kind of crazy if you sort of stop and think about it.
No, you're right. Professor Alan Sanders is the guest from St. Peter's University in Jersey City. Michael Bloomberg, he got ganged up on in the last debate, but you know, Professor, there's all these stories coming out now. There was an interesting one in Politico a couple of days ago that, you know, he is soldiering on for the moment, and he is actually trying to, I don't know if a plot or a scheme would be the right word, but he is trying to figure out a way to get the nomination here, maybe on the second ballot in the convention, if Bernie Sanders doesn't have enough to close the deal in round one.
Well, yes, and of course the Bloomberg strategy, and what's interesting is he has been betting all along that the Biden candidacy would implode. And so what really needs to be looked at tonight, and of course going into the South Carolina and primary Super Tuesday election, is whether Biden does indeed implode. If he does not, if he comes out and survives and resumes his momentum, which of course has been stalled, that really foils the entire strategy of Bloomberg. He's betting on Biden, as I said, getting out of the race. But if Biden doesn't get out of the race, then Bloomberg has some real problems to deal with because, of course, as we learned last time, his record is rather problematic for a Democratic electorate.
What, Professor, finally, what has happened to the Democratic Party here when, you know, 20-something years ago we had Bill Clinton come out of nowhere to defeat George H.W. Bush, who was thought to be gliding his way to a second term. And you had a guy like Bill Clinton who could appeal to the progressive end of the party. He was able to appeal to the Rust Belt. He could head back down south and be, you know, Bubba from Arkansas there if he had to. Where has that kind of candidate gone in the modern day Democratic Party?
Well, I think it exists and is alive and well, but the problem right now is that you have several candidates who appeal to that sort of constituency. You've got Biden, you've got Klobuchar, you've got Buttigieg, and arguably you have Michael Bloomberg. And so because that moderate lane is being occupied by so many people, that's causing a problem for that sort of candidate. Now, if some of them start to drop out, and of course there's a lot of talk about urging them to drop out earlier rather than later, then you might actually see a real fight again between that moderate lane and Bernie Sanders, which is of course what we saw last time between Hillary Clinton and Bernie Sanders. So that's the big concern of the moderate wing. Okay, let's consolidate, let's get together. Hillary managed to beat Bernie last time, and so there's every possibility that that could happen again. But for the moment, none of those five or so moderate candidates are willing to step aside.
What happens finally, Doctor, if Bernie Sanders is the nominee? What happens?
Well, that's a really good question. And of course, it's hard to tell. Certainly, we've got some inkling as to the problems that Bernie Sanders would face. We already know that Democratic politicians in Florida are very upset about his remarks regarding Cuba and Castro. We also know that the Democratic House majority was won largely by moderates, not by liberals. And we also know that despite Bernie Sanders' call for a revolution and bringing out new voters, he certainly did very well in the last few primaries, but he didn't really bring out any new voters. So all of that is real cause for concern for the Democratic Party.
He's the former senior reporter at Time Magazine, currently a professor of political science at St. Peter's University in Jersey City, New Jersey. Again, Professor Alan Sanders, thanks for joining us. We appreciate it.
My pleasure, Paul. You have a great afternoon.
Thanks, Professor. We appreciate it, as always. Good stuff there from Professor Alan Sanders. How are you?
Hi, Paul. I'm fine today. How are you doing?
I'm good. I'm very well. Thanks for taking the time. I appreciate it. What made you, Jackie, what made you write this? Again, I'm reading it going, gee, I didn't know this. I didn't know that. What made you tackle this subject last week?
Actually, as you say, it's something that's been on my mind, too, as I began to read about it and hear about these active shooter drills in the schools. And it just seemed like it could be pretty upsetting to kids. So the more I heard, the more alarmed I became. Actually, last September, I did write a column when Sandy Hook Promise, which is a grassroots group in Sandy Hook, of course, came out with a public service announcement and is trying to shake up people and make them realize what's going on. And this announcement, it was a parody, I guess you could say, kids going back to school. And for example, one of them is saying, oh, I'm glad I have a new backpack. This will protect me from a shooter. Another one says, I'm glad I have new sneakers. I can run faster. And that was pretty upsetting, and that did get me thinking, too. And it took me back to the days of the drills we had, the civil defense drills.
Oh, drop and cover.
Yeah, you know, don't let the bombs get you. But if you can hide under your desk, you'll be okay. Yeah. To scare the heck out of kids. I mean, I know it gave me nightmares and a lot of other kids, too.
Mm-hmm.
But the reason that I wrote the column for Friday last week was because two teacher unions, national teacher unions, and Every Town for Gun Safety came out with a report saying that, yes, these active drills, not just, you know, lockdowns, but the active drills really are traumatizing kids. And there's no proof that they work.
Yeah, and Jackie, it's one thing, like you said, you know, with the drop and cover, which I suspect kids back then are like, yeah, really? This is gonna protect me from a nuke. But you know, even when I was in school and we went, you know, fire drill, let's go. I mean, everybody knew that you could run away from a fire. There were plenty of doors to get out of the school. It was a big Catholic school. There were 10 doors to get out to the parking lot, and you know, and we had our designated spot to meet. But some of the things that you talk about in this column, for example, and I did read the story that you allude to, the national union and some individual states saying, you know, enough is enough. But talk about what are they doing in Indiana, which I had to read that twice. What was that? They're shooting kids with pellets?
Both teachers, not kids. But, yeah, so that happened at a school in Indiana. But let me tell you, that is happening in Connecticut, too. I had this message, let me read part of it to you, from Facebook, a fifth-grade teacher in New Britain.
Mm-hmm.
And she said, they actually gave us guns that shot rubber and asked the teacher to be the shooter. The rest of us had to either hide, run, or fight back. During our school's lockdown drills, kids are not told when it's coming, and they do have police and staff try and break into the doors. It's upsetting to most students and teachers.
I mean, so somebody told you this, that they actually have to play the part of a shooter?
Yes.
Man.
Yes. I mean, aren't we asking our teachers a lot here? This is not what they, you know, this is not educating students.
And beyond that, Jacqueline, the guest is Jacqueline Smith, once again, you know, beyond that, as you say, what are the kids thinking here? I mean, if this gets back to the kids or they're watching this or seeing this, I mean, look, I'm no amateur psychologist here, but you and I can both sit here at, you know, 5:15 on a Tuesday and say something with this may not be completely right. Am I nuts here or not?
Mm-hmm. I think, well, we're both nuts because we're thinking the same way then.
Yeah.
But, because the kids don't know it's a drill. It could be real. And how terribly frightening is that? So I think it's, you know, it's just not healthy. It's not right. And it does no good to mess with them that way.
You looked into also here, I read it, who actually has the purvey here, Jackie, of who overlooks this for the state. Explain that to us.
Yes, well, you know, I thought it would come under the Department of Education since this is happening in the schools, but it's actually Emergency Preparedness and Homeland Security. And I suppose that does make sense, too. But there are no standard requirements of what has to be done or how it should be done. They just collect the information. The districts have to file a report once a year saying that they're doing something. So there's no overall standard that, you know, first you have to notify kids that it's just a drill, or you don't arm teachers with rubber guns. Nothing like that.
So is there any, were you able to find out whether beyond that, Jackie, is there any overriding authority to this who tells them how to do these drills, or is that the purvey of the local police department? In other words, if I'm running one of the schools, okay, we have to do our active shooter drill, how do I do this? Who says, okay, here's the scenario that you have to play out? Do we know that?
I don't know that there's a requirement. I don't think there's a requirement on how they do it, but there are companies, security companies, that come in and do conduct it for the schools. Not every district hires them, but some do. And so they'll conduct the drills.
Interesting. Jackie, hang on. Jacqueline yeah. Smith is the guest, columnist, editorial page editor for Hearst Connecticut Media, the Norwalk Hour, and the Danbury News Times. She wrote a piece last week that opened my eyes to a lot of things going on and not going on regarding these active shooter drills in many Connecticut schools. It's 5:16, traffic and weather together straight ahead right here on WICC. 19 past 5 o'clock, 5:19 right here on WICC. Do your kids, your grandkids, your nephews and nieces ever tell you they have active shooter drills in Connecticut schools? Apparently they go on more often than you think, and Jackie Smith has written about it in her column, her weekly column. She did this last week for the Hearst Connecticut papers. We continue with her for a couple more minutes. Jacqueline, I did see that you did ask the state's education commissioner about this, Miguel Cardona, for his position on it. What did he tell you, and was he open to discussing this or not?
Well, he did have a statement, and I've known him for a while, by the way. He is an open educator, and he's very sensitive to students of all ages. He said that anything as serious as these drills need to be examined regularly. There is preparation that's needed for natural disasters, which I agree with, but not to the point where it creates trauma for students and staff. Stop short of saying, you know, what would be done.
Sure. You also, I notice here in the piece, cite some recommendations from the Everytown group. And also from Moms Demand Action, several groups here. And there are, you have six bullet points here that the recommendations are being made by some of these groups to make these a little less stressful. Talk about a couple of those.
What I like about it is that it empowers parents, grandparents, anyone who cares to find out for themselves what's going on in their district. Go to the school board and ask these questions and tell them that you think parents should be notified ahead of time so they will know how to talk to their children about it, and that students, too, should know that it's a drill. It, you know, it's not really happening. And there are ways to make it age-appropriate. And so, you know, there's six questions that they should ask, yeah. And they should know. And also, you know, tell the people they elect to run the schools what they want done.
What other kind of response have you gotten? I know you in the first part of our chat here said that you did get, you know, some feedback on this, opening your eyes to certain things. But have you gotten any additional feedback on this? Has your piece kind of hit a nerve on this or not?
Well, I'd say so. I have had a number of readers write in thanking me for writing it. Some didn't know about it, that this is happening in the schools. You know, others are, and all of them, I think, are very concerned. One person did write and say that he thought they're necessary. If it helps save kids, then, you know, we have to do it. And I certainly understand that viewpoint, but I don't think we have to make it seem so real. You know, you were talking about fire drills earlier. Well, we didn't have to start a fire in a hallway to make it seem real.
Okay, kids, here's what a fire looks like. No, we didn't have to do that. And Jackie, as you say, I can just imagine how, if this is botched here, we're not alleging anybody's screwing this up to that end, but if this is botched, I can just imagine how this could, you know, really traumatize somebody who may have had something previously go on in their lives, and this could sort of trigger something here.
Yes, absolutely. That's a concern.
So where do we go from here now? Will you be doing a follow-up with this, or have you forwarded any further questions or inquiries to any officials? Because I'm really interested to hear what more people think about this.
I am too, and I will be following up. Generally, I do like to go back to issues and let readers know what has happened, if anything. Sometimes nothing happens, you know, and people have to know that too. So I will follow up.
Jacqueline, it's been fascinating. The piece appeared last week, last Friday. Jacqueline Smith, editorial page editor, Danbury News Times, Norwalk Hour. The piece is Rethink Active Shooter Drills in Schools. Jacqueline, thanks for the time. I really appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you for your time, Paul.
Thanks. Appreciate it. Bye-bye.